This is Twit.
Okay, so some dark side follow-up. The team at FireEye, they also call themselves Mandiant, the research group, the eight of them put their names on this report because it was extensive. And I'm just going to talk about the first third of it because they go deep into the operating mechanism of the actual ransomware that DarkSide is known to be pushing, and which, of course, now famously infected the Colonial Pipeline organization. They've done a bunch of deep and delicious research into the group and their software. And they originally took this work public last Tuesday on the 11th, a week while we were doing this podcast, essentially last week. But after the news of the apparent dark side takedown surfaced, they updated their post just last Friday, adding the following preface. They said, Mandiant has observed multiple actors cite a May 13th announcement that appeared to be shared with DarkSide RAAS, you know, ransomware as a service, affiliates, by the operators of the service. This announcement stated that they lost access to their infrastructure, including their blog, payment, and CDN servers, and would be closing their service. That is to say, DarkSide apparently announcing that they're closing their service. Now, I've got a little story about Toshiba here in a minute that sort of makes you wonder about that. But they also said decryptors would be provided for companies who have not paid, possibly for their affiliates to distribute. The Post cited law enforcement pressure and pressure from the United States for this decision. And the FireEye Mandiant guy said that we have not independently validated these claims. And there is some speculation by other actors that this could be an exit scam. So I'm just putting that out there because it's out there. We don't know one way or the other. What we do know is that beginning in November of 2020, the Russian-speaking actor known as DarkSupp, DarkSupp, began advertising the DarkSide ransomware as a service on the Russian language forums, two of them, exploit.in and xss.is, obviously as in cross-site scripting. And interestingly, in the past few days, both of these sites, and I've got a lot more to say about that in a second, have indicated that they would no longer host ads and forums or postings, contents, and threads for ransomware services, stating that it has drawn too much unwanted attention from law enforcement. I actually have, we have some translated from Russian quotes that we'll get to. Anyway, since that's also big news, we'll have more to say about that later. Okay, but last month, April 2021, DarkSupp, this apparently like the guy behind DarkSide, posted an update for the DarkSide 2.0 ransomware as a service that included several new features and a description of the types of partners and services they were currently seeking. Affiliates, and so from that, we gain some more information about this, about them that we didn't have before. Affiliates retain a percentage of the ransom fee from each victim. Of course, I would argue affiliates get the lion's share, right, of the ransom fee, which was one of the things that impressed us when we first started talking about this several years ago, was that the services were doing the right thing by basically taking a commission, essentially. So based on the advertisements that have now been seen, the operators, that is the ransomware as a service operators, in this case DarkSide, take 25% ransom fee when the amount paid is less than $500,000. And that decreases from 25% for less than $500,000 down to 10% for fees greater than $5 million. In addition to providing builds of DarkSide ransomware, the operators of this service also maintain a blog accessible via Tor.
I think it's ironic that Apple takes a larger cut on the App Store than DarkSide does of the ransomware.
Oh, and Leo, on the next page of the show notes, you might want to put this on the screen. We have a picture of the control panel that the affiliates use in order to do this. It's sort of amazing. The actors use this site, their Tor site, to publicize their victims in an attempt to pressure those organizations into paying for the non-release of the stolen data. A recent update to their underground forum advertisement also indicates that actors may attempt to DDoS victim organizations. The actor DarkSup, who is apparently behind DarkSide, has stated that affiliates are prohibited from targeting hospitals, schools, universities, nonprofit organizations, and public sector entities. And this may be, as we would imagine now, an effort by the actors to deter law enforcement action, since targeting these sectors may invite additional scrutiny. Affiliates are also prohibited from targeting organizations in Commonwealth of Independent States, CIS nations. So the original November 2020 advertisement boasts some features which, you know, they wanted to make clear, they like of their service, the DarkSide, the ability to generate builds for both Windows and Linux environments from within the admin panel, encrypts files using, and we knew this last week, SALSA 20 encryption along with RSA 1024 public key crypto, access to an administrative panel via Tor that can be used by clients, meaning their affiliates, to manage DarkSide builds, payments, blog posts, and communication with their victims. The admin panel includes a blog section that allows their clients, their affiliates, to publish victim information and announcements to the DarkSide website for the purposes of shaming victims and coercing them to pay ransom demands. Then, in an update that we talked about middle of last month in April, they added automated test decryption. That they said the process from encryption to withdrawal of money is now automated and no longer relies on support, meaning there's no response delay from DarkSup and his minions behind the scenes. It's all now an automated process. They're also available. They have DDoS for targeting both at layer 3, which is at the network layer, and layer 7 at the protocol layer. And they said seeking a partner to provide network accesses and a person or team with pen testing skills. And just for entertainment value, and actually to show how slick and polished this looks, I have in the show notes a screenshot of this control panel, which is available through the Tor network, a means to get to their site, showing like all the switches and bells and whistles and stuff that is there.
It's really kind of polished.
It really is.
Surprising.
I mean,
but it shows you that they're acting, they feel, with complete impunity. And probably because they're Russian nationals, maybe even because they have some government protection, they just don't feel vulnerable to anything. So they figure, well, let's do it right. Let's make a nice little site here. They're probably very good coders.
Their physical security is safe.
Right.
They feel like they're able to put things up in Tor. They're transacting using Bitcoin. So it's like, you know, nanny, nanny, nanny. You can't get us. So would-be affiliates are required to pass an interview, after which they're provided with, yes, their interview.
Well, yeah, we don't want any no losers here.
That's right. That's right. Then they're given access to the admin panel and told to have at it. And using this panel, affiliates can perform various actions, such as creating a ransomware build for themselves, providing content to the blog, managing their victims, and contacting the back-end dark side support if they've got questions or need help. The Mandiant guys have identified at least five Russian-speaking actors who may currently or have previously been dark side affiliates. The relevant advertisements associated with a portion of these threat actors have been aimed at finding either initial access providers or actors capable of deploying ransomware on accesses already obtained. Some actors claiming to use DarkSide have also allegedly partnered with other RAS affiliate programs, including Babuk and the Sodino Kibi, also known as Reval. And I guess it should not be surprising that affiliates might be maintaining relationships with more than one ransomware as a service provider at a time. You know, I suppose that at some point, the convenience of using the RAS service, maybe the size of the piece of the action which the ransomware provider takes from the ransomware or from the ransom payment would become a consideration. You know, how responsive they are, how trusted they are, and so forth. So, you know, nothing prevents the affiliates from setting up relationships with multiple ransomware as a service providers. So in their report, the FireEye Mandiant guys provided detailed affiliate specific information about three specific affiliates. I won't go into each of them here, but it was interesting to see that I did go through them myself, and I saw that each of the three were clearly distinct and quite different from the others in their means of initial penetration and the way they moved within networks once they were in. They clearly felt like very different, threat actors, where the only obvious link between the three was that they all decided they were going to use DarkSide as their ransomware attack package. And so the Mandiant guys concluded their general discussion in the first part of this long blog posting by writing. They said, "We believe that threat actors have become more proficient at conducting multifaceted extortion operations, and that this success has directly contributed to the rapid increase in the number of high-impact ransomware incidents over the past few years. Ransomware operators have incorporated additional extortion tactics designed to increase the likelihood that victims will acquiesce to paying the ransom prices. As one example, in late April of 2021, the DarkSide operators published a press release. Get this, Leo. The DarkSide put out a press release stating that they were targeting organizations listed on the NASDAQ and other stock markets. They indicated that they would be willing to give stock traders information about upcoming leaks.
Everything but the squeal, baby. Just use it all, baby. Everything. Gonna make money in every possible way.
That's right. We're gonna switch into the insider trading business, giving stock traders information about upcoming leaks in order to allow them potential profits due to stock price drops after an announced breach. Wow. In another notable example, they wrote, an attacker was able to obtain the victim's cyber insurance policy data and leveraged that information during the ransom negotiation process, refusing to lower the ransom amount given their knowledge of the policy's limits. This reinforces that during the post-exploitation phase of ransomware incidents, threat actors can engage in internal reconnaissance and obtain data to increase their negotiating leverage. They said, we expect that the extortion tactics that threat actors use to pressure victims will continue to evolve through 2021. And they finished, based on the evidence that dark side ransomware is distributed by multiple actors, we, and in fact, I think, oh no, I was getting myself confused about a number that we'll get to in a second. Anyway, they said, distributed by multiple actors, we anticipate that, and this is a term of art now, TTPs, the tactics, techniques, and procedures used throughout incidents associated with this ransomware will continue to vary. And as I said, given the three very different users of dark side, you know, dark side affiliates that they did detail, you know, that they really look like entirely separate entities. So thanks to the colossal focus brought to bear by the Colonial Pipeline attack, which, if nothing else, the dark side operators certainly regret in retrospect, the industry at large has been able to get a detailed look into the operation of a ransomware as a service operation, arguably with more detail and focus than we've had so far. It's been widely noted that cryptocurrency has been an enabling factor for ransomware, since it potentially solves the problem of the bad guys getting away with the goods.